Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Rathmanner. Thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Well, it is a beautiful day here in the Midwest, and we are just loving this weather that I hear is not going to last very long, Ryan.
Oh, I didn't know that, actually.
Get out today, get out tomorrow, right after you listen to the show, because today we're going to have a little focus on missions. I'm very excited for today because we get to talk about children, we get to talk about how we can help, and just what an impact that going into the mission field, whether it's here or overseas or somewhere nearby, how that can change a life and turn our hearts toward God. So very exciting there. Well, I'd love to talk about Haiti just a little bit. Since a magnitude 7 earthquake struck the country of Haiti in 2010, killing nearly 250,000 people and leaving nearly 1.5 million people homeless, thousands of Americans, as you know, maybe you are one of them, have traveled to Port-au-Prince and other areas that have been affected, that Haiti have affected Haiti, to help people. Many have returned a second or even a third time as their hearts were open to the great need that exists among the Haitian people. Well, little did my guest know today that when she took that first trip to Haiti, that she would return not only once or twice, but to live there permanently and be a part of the effort to feed, educate, and free child slaves of the Haitian people. She'd also bring medical care to a place that was once known for voodoo practice and is now known for something quite different. But we'll hear her powerful story on the first half of today's show. So let me introduce my guest. Megan Bordreau, at the age of 24, founded Respire Haiti, a nonprofit to fight for the freedom of Haiti's estimated 300,000 child slaves. Megan followed God's call to begin a feeding program and transform a barren hillside into a refuge and a school for nearly 500 children. A medical clinic is also nearing completion with future plans for a church, a community center, and a library. Megan has adopted 4 Haitian children, and in 2013, she married her best friend, Josh Anderson. Well, Megan, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. I'm glad we can hear you now. I was a little bit concerned about 90 seconds ago when I couldn't hear you.
Yeah, I called back in. It wasn't really working.
Well, you sound great now. And Megan has just recently released a book called Miracle on Voodoo Mountain, a young woman's remarkable story of pushing back the darkness for the children of Haiti. And Megan, I'd love if you would just tell a little bit of your backstory on how you came to Haiti in the first place. And then what is it that compelled you to go back?
Sure. I actually was working for a hospital doing some marketing and public relations for a children's hospital in Louisiana, and they asked me to go to Haiti, to go bring some doctors to Haiti in April of 2010, about 4 months after the earthquake. And initially I said, no, I really don't want to go. I'd never even heard of Haiti or didn't even really know where it was. And then slowly I ended up being the one that they chose to go. So I said, okay, I'll go, and visited the first time for about 5 days and was just completely overwhelmed with just the need and everything. And in my heart, I was like, I don't want to come back here ever again. I don't want to be, exposed to that again. And so as God would have it, a few months later, I ended up coming back again. And that's when I first came to Gracie, Haiti, which is where I live now. And then God just started working in my heart and changed my mind and my attitude about it completely.
So you came back as a second time, and then the third time you came back, was that when you decided to spend a little bit more time, though, even though you didn't know that that would be permanent?
Yeah, on my second visit, that's whenever I started, to feel that God was kind of changing my heart. And then in between my second trip and my third trip, there was about 3 months, and that's when I just started waking up in the middle of the night with dreams about just what God wanted to do on this mountain. And so I ended up moving here in January of 2011, about 9 months after my first visit to Haiti.
And when you moved there, I loved reading in your book how you still weren't really sure where it was or what it was that God was calling you to. You knew where he was calling you to, but you didn't know what it was that you were to do. Tell us about how you finally came to that understanding of, oh, maybe this is why he has placed me here at this time.
Yeah. In fact, when I first moved to Haiti, I thought, oh, aren't you supposed to, you know, start a nonprofit before you go somewhere? So I started the nonprofit, and the mission statement was to help children. And it was, I had no idea what God exactly was going to put on, you know, in front of me. And so after I was in Haiti, I just started praying. And the first thing that happened was I saw a little girl that was throwing rocks at a bird because she was hungry. And so I ended up starting a feeding program, and then from the feeding program saw that all these kids weren't in school. And so it was just little by little, because when I moved over there, I had no idea what kind of, you know, ministry God had for me.
So this little girl actually was part of what started you thinking about children and their situations in Haiti. Can you tell us a little bit about that so that we can understand the situation that many children are in when it comes to child slavery?
Sure. Yes. I mean, I noticed that she was doing all the dishes and doing all the laundry and fetching all the water, and she didn't go to school, and it just seemed like she worked all the time, and she was only seven. And so I started asking questions, and then I started doing some research, and I found out that she was what they call a restevec. It's a French word. Reste means to stay, and avec means with, and it's literally a child slave or domestic servant, and they live with people that are not their family, and they do all of the chores, the cooking, cleaning, dishes, everything, and they don't go to school, and a lot of it involves abuse. And so after I saw that that's what she was, then it really opened up my eyes and my heart to just loving on them. And that's basically, that's how our school started, was because we saw that these kids were not in school.
And what, tell us about what the earthquake did to create this culture where all of a sudden there were so many children who were in need, who didn't have parents, who didn't have a place to live. Did that kind of help contribute to this culture that exists where children are used as slaves, even children as young as seven?
Yes, this unfortunately, this is a culture that has been going on for over 50 years, and it's something that's almost become just a culturally accepted norm, that people just, you know, grow up knowing that there's restevex in certain people's homes and stuff. And so although the earthquake kind of made that a little bit worse, this problem existed way before the earthquake, and instead it just kind of almost made it just worse with more kids being relocated to different places. But this problem has and continues to be just a huge issue in Haiti.
So you're a girl of 24. You are renting a place. You're not quite sure what it is that you're supposed to be doing, but you know you're supposed to be helping children, and God continues to open your eyes to what the needs are of those children around you. How did you come to that point where you said, all right, this is it, I need to build a school?
Looking back, it's such just a privilege to be part of what God is doing, because it really, even to this day, even just, you know, working here in Gracia this morning, it's just a step-by-step process. You know, God just opened one door and I put one foot out and kept walking, and he's built this school. Now we have 17 classrooms and a 6,500 square foot medical clinic that we've built, and all of those things. You know, it wasn't like I went over in January 2011 and thought, okay, this is what I'm supposed to do, and have this huge plan. Instead, it was like one step at a time. And so building that first building, it was completely on faith. We had no money to build it. We had no idea how much, you know, how difficult it would be to get the money, or if it would be easy, but instead we just decided to start, and God provided. And so every one of our endeavors has been like that. But, you know, the school was just, we just knew we had kids that weren't in school. We had no place to put them into a school. So we started our own.
Well, and isn't that ironic that many people think that they have to have a plan? People will say, I'm just praying for where God is leading me and what he's leading me to do. And you are saying, well, you don't always have to have the plan as long as you know that you are going where God has called you to be and that he's going to outlay those steps as we continue to submit and be humble and be ready for what it is that he has next for us that next day. It seems like as I read through all of your stories in your book, your real life stories in your book, that is the pattern that you continue to follow. Can you encourage people to follow that kind of pattern instead of the I need it all laid out before I'm going to say yes mentality that we seem to have?
Absolutely. You know, if I knew the end result, I never would have started because it just took so much, obedience just to take that first step, and so quickly, I say I never would have started because I never would have seen what God would do, So we always are waiting to see the whole story and to see the finish before we, want to begin. But the reality is God wants us to begin so we can walk with him in obedience through all of this, And I would never have been able to tell you 4 years ago we would have, 18 classrooms, 500 children in our school, 100 staff. I never would have known that because I wouldn't have even thought that was possible. But instead, as you said, just so many stories in the book just reveal that, God just said, just trust me in this, just take this first step. And every time I took the first step, he was ahead of me planning the next one for me. And I just continued to be obedient. So I think that's true in so much of our life is that, if we can be obedient to what God is putting right in front of us, we just need to trust that he is faithful and he's going to accomplish what he wants in us.
Well, the book is called Miracle on Voodoo Mountain, a young woman's remarkable story of pushing back the darkness for the children of Haiti. The author is Megan Bourdreau, and I get to speak with her for a little bit longer about her experience of building a school, a medical clinic, and much more in Haiti to help the children there. We'll be right back talking to her on Connecting Faith. But in the meantime, if you are listening and say, I would love to hear more about her story, well, she has been very generous to donate a handful of books, and we would love to get those in your hands. Just give us a call at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Rathmanner. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. We're focusing on missions today and specifically on Haiti because I get the opportunity to speak with author Megan Bourdreau. And she went to Haiti as a 24-year-old and actually ended up just following God's lead, starting a nonprofit, and now has a school, a medical center, and plans for much more. Correct, Megan?
Yes, ma'am, that is correct.
What are your plans for the future with this great organization?
Our next plan is we really would like to build a community center here in Gracie. It's a community of about 75,000 people, and there aren't very many extracurricular activities or anything for the kids to do. And so our community center will have a place for art and dance and music and theater for our kids. And, we really are just pushing for our children to have normal lives here. And so we have this vision for just them to have a joyful place to do that.
Probably for me, the most compelling part of your book was listening to your experience with an orphanage that had been set up, but that was corrupt. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how that changed you?
Sure. About a couple of months into living in Haiti, I got invited to go and visit an orphanage in the next town over. And so as I went, immediately when I walked in, I just had such a bad feeling, and it was such a difficult experience. And I kept going back and noticing more and more things, and the children not eating, it was just very poor condition. And then some came to my attention that made me extremely uncomfortable, and I started noticing that children were going missing. And when I would ask about the kids, they wouldn't really answer me, or they would kind of look at me like, oh, that's a child like that's never been here. And so the longer I started pulling together some information, the more I realized just from within the orphanage and some information outside of the orphanage that these children were being trafficked and sold to different places. Yes.
And so you were part of getting that place shut down, correct?
Yes, ma'am. We had the hard part was there was about 12 different organizations, American churches and organizations that were supporting this orphanage. And so the first thing I had to do was kind of speak with all of them together to let them know that there were other people helping. Each one of them knew about a few others, but they didn't know that there were 12 other organizations actually helping this one orphanage. And so after they understood how much deception was going on, we kind of all banded together. And then long story short, we ended up getting the orphanage closed, and the First Lady of Haiti was the one who closed it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that story is just so good. And so if you are able to get your hands on that book, it's just a wonderful way, again, of watching how God was just leading you into a situation that seemed so uncomfortable. And I felt afraid for you many, many, many times as I was reading your story. So thank you for being brave on behalf of those children.
Looking back when I read it too, I'm like, wow, I'm reading it going, this is really crazy. But just in the moment, whenever I was so sure this is what God wanted me to do, you know, I never was afraid in the moment. But now looking back, I'm the same way. I'm like, oh gosh, who did that? That's crazy.
So the title of your book is Miracle on Voodoo Mountain. And that has a lot to do with the practice of voodoo that is very prevalent in Haiti. Can you tell me about that and how those experiences with people who are engaged in voodoo have really kind of sharpened your faith and just caused you to feel a need to be there in that spot?
Yeah, essentially, whenever I first bought this piece of land, like, I had no idea that there was anything different going on with it. And in fact, I said no a few times just because it was built, the land was mountainous and hilly, and I'm from Louisiana, and I was like, oh, we need flatland. And so that was essentially why I was like, oh, I'm not going to buy this. But then we couldn't find other land, and it ended up just being that God really wanted us to get this land. And so after we bought it, the story started coming out that that there was voodoo ceremonies that were performed on this land. And out of the whole piece of land, it's about 6 acres, there's only one tree. And it was under this one tree that most of these voodoo ceremonies took place. And even up until a few years ago, before we built a wall around our whole place, there was still voodoo ceremonies that would happen every night.
And are there children still who come to your school who have now they, of course, are learning about Jesus and who he is, but they may live in families where their parents or whoever their caretakers are the opposite of that, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. We have actually a lot of children that have either parents that are voodoo priests or voodoo priestesses. We have a lot of kids that actually live in voodoo temples with their families. And so it's a really difficult situation for them, but at the same time, they have the opportunity to learn about Christ, and a lot of them are bringing their families to Christ through learning about freedom and their identity in Christ at school. They're able to share it with other people. But yes, that's a huge issue that we have, is that we've got a lot of kids that live in places that are just very, very covered in voodoo.
Well, and that just gives our listeners a great way to pray for you. So thanks for sharing about that. And I'd also love you to just tell us how you've come to adopt 4 children.
Sure.
It's a short story. We have 5 minutes left. I'm sure you can cram it all in there.
Sure. I'll make it short. But, after I moved to Haiti, there was one of the little girl, actually, who had the rocks and was throwing the rocks at the bird. One day she showed up at my house, and she said, you know, they said they don't want me anymore. They said you could have me. And my heart just broke, and I thought, oh, my gosh, how could that be? And so, of course, I took her in immediately, and I was like, okay, God, you know, you're going to have to show me how this works, because I'm too young and I'm not married and I don't know how this is going to happen. And so I took her in, and through her paperwork, getting it all together, we realized that she had a younger sister. And that's how my first 2 children were adopted, is just from, you know, that circumstance. And then about 2 years later, we had a set of siblings, a young boy and a girl in our school that were orphaned, and they were actually living in a voodoo temple as well. And so God just, they went missing for a few weeks. And my husband and I, at the time I was married, and my husband and I just, our heart broke for them. And so we went searching for them and found them. And now we've adopted them. And so we've been living all together, and it's been just a blessing to have our four sweet kids. And, you know, God's been just so incredible with that.
You did such a great job of telling that story in a short time frame. Now you have time to tell me about your recent marriage as well. How did you come to know your husband? That's really an interesting story as well. And now he's there with you.
Yes, yes. He was actually on a visiting trip. So he's American. He's from Colorado, and he was on a trip visiting here in Haiti, and he kept coming back, and I kept wondering why he was coming back. And then, as you know, as divine as it sounds, you know, we just realized that this, we had the same heart and the same passion. And so we got married actually in January of 2013. We got married here in Haiti, and we just celebrated our 2-year anniversary a few months ago. So it was amazing to just find somebody here that God had provided, that just as a helpmate, just that loves the same thing and just has the same desires and passion that I do.
Just another thing in the line of everything that we're, how God has provided each step. It seems like as you take a step, he provides the answer that you didn't even know was there. And that's really evident as we read your story, Megan. I just wish you the best of luck as you continue this, this adventure in helping children and really the people and families in Haiti as well. I'd love if you would tell us how people could support you if they would like to, and how we can get more information on you.
Sure. You can visit our website, respirehaiti.org. And on there, it shows you all of our ministries and our programs that we have, and all the prayer requests and the way to donate and help our programs as well. And as well, it has a link to the book to where you can buy Miracle on Voodoo Mountain, which is sold on Amazon as well as Barnes & Noble.
Okay, so that's a great way. We'll have all that information as well on Megan's author page on our site at myfaithradio.com. And Megan, I just want to thank you again for taking the time to talk with us and for writing this compelling book to help us understand what it is that's happening in Haiti and how much more help is needed, and that we can be the hands and feet of God as we continue to just put ourselves out there and see what he will do. So thank you so much.
Great, thank you.
And up next, we're going to talk to another person who had an experience with reaching out to Haiti, and many more experiences on how God has led him through his art. It's an artist, a musician, a songwriter, and a music pastor. His name is Tyler Holte, and we're going to hear his story coming up in our second half hour on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us. I hope you were able to hear our last half hour with author Megan Bordereau. She is a missionary in Haiti and has set up just a wonderful school, medical center, and recreation area for children in Haiti. If you'd like to know more about her, you can listen to the podcast of the show if you missed that first half hour under Connect My Faith Radio. Just click on Connecting Faith and you can listen to it that way. But right now, I get the pleasure of speaking with recording artist Tyler Holte. And let me tell you a little bit about him. That's who you were just listening to as we came in from the break there. Tyler Holte is a recording artist from Minneapolis who has recently released his debut album titled Breakthrough. He grew up in a missionary family. He spent time in Mexico, Guatemala, Haiti, Uganda, and all across the United States serving the less fortunate with his family. Tyler's journey through faith also includes a bit of rebellion and a 10-year battle with alcoholism that led him far from the mission field and the church. But in 2012, he went to Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge, which we've talked about a lot on this show and this station, and upon graduating, moved into Serenity Village, a transitional housing facility that encourages and mentors its residents to develop a deeper relationship with God and sets them loose into the purposes that God has called them for their lives. Well, this journey and all of these experiences are reflected in his music. We're going to play some of that during this half hour and also talk to Tyler about why he wrote what he wrote and how he is just exploring all that God has for him right now. He's an active member of Serenity Village Community Church and participates in their many missions and research outreach opportunities. Welcome, Tyler.
Thank you for having me.
So that song we just heard was called Breakthrough. I noticed that it's number one on your album, so that always makes me think that's a really important song. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that and your faith journey?
Well, my mom is in studio with us today, and she would tell you that it was more than a little bit of rebellion. But I used to have a really hard time talking about my testimony, and I think it was partly because of some shame and guilt over the things that I had done and people that I had hurt, and partly because in my head, I thought that a testimony is supposed to be, you know, I was struggling and I was really down and out, and now I've arrived and I've figured everything out and it's all good. And in my life, even today, I can tell you that things are not always all good, and I still haven't figured things out. And my pastor is here with me, and he would tell you that I still have a lot of issues that I need to work through. But I was on a trip to Uganda, and I was I have a good friend over there who's a priest named Father Leoncio. And we're reading through the story of the prodigal son, and he said something that really, really hit home to me. We were reading the story, and he asked me, he said, Tyler, what is the name of the story? And I said, well, it's the story of the prodigal son. And he said, yes, that's the title, but it's the wrong title. And I said, why do you say that, Father? And he said, because the story is not about what the son did. The story is about what the father did. And in my life, you know, my story is not about what I've done or what I've accomplished and what I've been able to do. It's about what God did for me when I couldn't do anything for myself. And, you know, the Bible doesn't say that sin makes us bad people. It's actually much worse than that. It says that sin makes us dead people. And when I was dead in my sin, God brought me back to life. And Jesus came not only that we could have a life, but have a full, abundant, overflowing life. And that's what I've experienced since taking a step back towards the Lord. And that's the really cool thing, is that I ran from God for a long time. And it doesn't matter how far we get from God, if we're willing to turn around and just take one step back towards him, he's there and he's faithful and he takes care of us. And that's really what this song is about for me, is just reconnecting with God and getting back to where I knew I should be the whole time.
Well, I love that you wrote in your story about this song that you've felt like the level of faith that you had wasn't enough for whatever it is that God wanted from you. Mm-hmm. What kind of got you past that, where you realized that you weren't the person who needed to be enough anyway?
Well, a lot of it has to do with working with my pastor. He mentors me very closely, and he's kind of guided me through this journey, because I found myself in a lot of places where I had no idea what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of just become comfortable for me at this point. I wrote this song getting ready for a retreat a couple of times a year. Our whole church goes up to my pastor's cabin, and I was at a place where I just, you know, I hadn't backslidden, I don't think, but I just had kind of plateaued in my faith, and I knew that the level of faith that I currently had, I wanted something deeper and I wanted something more. So that's really what the breakthrough is talking about.
Well, we are going to hear a little bit more about your journey through Haiti, You wrote a song about that as well. And what became of that, of course, we're going to talk about that when we come back from the break. But we're going to take a quick break. We also have some copies of Tyler's CD. We'd love to get those in your hands as well. You can give us a call at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. And we will be able to play a little bit more of his music, give you a little bit of a teaser. But it's a great album and has wonderful messages as well. We'll talk more about that when we come back on Connecting Faith. Talking with Tyler Holte today about his brand new, recently released debut album titled Breakthrough. Tyler is also grew up in a missionary family. He spent time in Mexico, Guatemala, Haiti, Uganda, and all across the United States serving the less fortunate. He has also had a very interesting journey through faith, like we all have, and he also works for Serenity Village Church. And I can tell you, Tyler, that as I was reading about this song on your trip to Haiti, it sounds very suspiciously like many people who go on their first mission trip, even though I know this wasn't your first, where you just feel overwhelmed, like, I cannot possibly do enough to help the people who are suffering here. Mm-hmm. And it seems like that was kind of how you came to write this song as well. Is that true? And what was your story there?
Yeah, definitely. I've always had a heart and a passion for the people of Haiti. I went down there for the first time in 2009, I think, and listening to the first half of the interview with Megan, I just can't thank her enough for what she's doing. And there's so many people that have a heart for those people, and it's just a blessing to see all that God is doing down there. But when I was down there about a year ago on a trip, we went to a children's hospital, and the conditions there were very bleak. And knowing what we know in this country about infection and the importance of cleanliness and those types of things, it was very difficult to go through that and see the little children who were fighting for their lives in very poor conditions. And I just got the feeling that it's going to be very difficult for any of these kids to ever leave this hospital. And as we left there, I was very frustrated. I wanted to be able to help these kids, but I knew that we were going to be leaving in a couple of days and they were still going to be there. And it was a very helpless feeling, and I was frustrated. And so we left there, and we went to a grocery store to buy some food for the evening, and everyone else went inside, and I just stayed with the truck. And in the parking lot, I kind of broke down, and I questioned my faith, and I questioned God and how he could be ignoring these beautiful children and just neglecting them and allowing them to suffer like this. And I questioned why I was on this trip, because I was going to be leaving soon, and they would still be there and they would still be suffering. And I wanted to do something to help them, but I didn't know how I could or what I could possibly do. And I really just cried out to God and asked him what was going on. And, in the parking lot of a grocery store in Port-au-Prince, Haiti, God met me right where I was at. And, he told me that he understood that I couldn't see it from where I was at, but that he did have a plan for Haiti and that he was, working things out for them, and that he had a great and powerful plan that he was working out. And he told me that he was touched that I had compassion for these kids, but he also reminded me not to forget that those are his kids and he's a good father. And so I went home and I wrote down kind of what I was feeling in that parking lot. And from that time on, everywhere that we went, I could just see God's hands moving all over in Haiti and in the little children and the laughs that they have, and in the elderly and the smiles that they have. And if you've never been to a church service in Haiti, the worship in Haiti is just different than anywhere else I've ever been, because they don't praise God with their voices or with their mouths. They worship God with their entire heart and soul. And this song is called I Am a Healing Haiti Anthem, because some people have told me that they connected with it and they really appreciate that song. But for people who have been on those trips and who have walked through City Soleil and who have been up to Grace Village and who have visited the tent church, it really takes on a whole new life. And it's fun for me to play it when I haven't been down there for a while, because it kind of takes me back and I'm able to reconnect with some of the people that I really love so much. So.
And it seems like a lot of people who go on a mission trip, especially to an area that is just full of poverty and it seems hopeless, that they go through that same experience of thinking, what can I possibly do? I can't possibly be the answer. I mean, Megan's story, it is wonderful and wonderfully unique that mm-hmm. she actually got to make an impact there. But do you feel like sometimes going on a trip is not only to help the people who you're trying to help, but also to change the heart of the person who then comes back to this area and then is expected to use what they've learned to love people here as well?
Oh, absolutely. And I can tell you that I've been on a lot of missions trips, and I've received much more than I've ever given from the people of Mexico and the people of Haiti and the people of Uganda. And that's one of my goals in connecting our church with Healing Haiti, because Healing Haiti does an awesome job, and their mission trips are truly life-changing. And the reason that I wanted our church to be connected with Healing Haiti is because I knew that people would come back just on fire for God and ready to serve God. And our church does a lot of local missions and outreach in the Twin Cities here. And since we started taking those trips, I've seen people just transformed and just completely on fire for serving God. And it's a little bit of a difficult transition to come back and get back to your normal life. And when you see such poverty and such suffering and hurt, and to come back to our pretty comfortable lives. But it's also an opportunity to just be extremely grateful for everything that we have and everything that God has done for us.
You also have a unique story that you had 10 years of just suffering from a horrible addiction. How did you come to Teen Challenge, first of all? And then how did you learn more about who God was in that space in your life? You've known God for your entire life,
yeah.
But how did you come to know him more fully and what he could do for you and in you and through you through that experience?
Well, I grew up in a good Christian family, and my parents were missionaries, and so I always had the foundation, which is kind of a blessing and a curse, because I had that to fall back on when I decided that I needed to change things in my life. I had that to fall back on, but also when I wasn't living that way, I always knew that it wasn't right, and I always knew that this wasn't what God had for me. And it really just, I had to get to a point where I completely surrendered, and I knew that my plans weren't going to get me anywhere. The biggest thing that the reason that I'm here today, and my pastor often prays before he starts his sermon, and he says he thanks God for another day above ground and out of prison. Mm. And every time he says that, it really touches me, because I know that that's the path that I was heading down. And the reason that I am not where I was is not because of anything that I did, as I said before. It's because we serve a great and mighty God, and he is faithful, and he is extremely patient, and also he answered the prayers of a desperate woman who just wanted her son back. And my mom is here with me today, and I know that she prayed me back into the kingdom. And there's a spot in the Bible where they're asking Jesus which commandment is the most important, and he says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. And if those are the two things that we're going to be judged on, I know that my mother is going to have a very high seat in heaven, mm-hmm. because she does those two things better than anyone I've ever met. And so I had a lot of support, both in Teen Challenge and once I got out. Another key factor in me being able to get out of that is the church that I'm a part of, Serenity Village Community Church. And it's just the most loving and accepting place. People are real there, and we don't have to act like we have it all together. We can show up as we are and be loved and accepted. And really being able to accept that love is a big part of how I've been able to move forward. So,
What do you do personally, or maybe someone in your church does this as well, to help people overcome that idea that if you are a Christ follower, then you are perfect and you have a perfect life and you've arrived at this spot where you no longer struggle, where you are no longer suffering, where you no longer have any worries? Because people do sometimes mistakenly have that perception, and so that makes them not even want to learn about who God is. Mm-hmm. What is it that we can do as Christ followers to be more welcoming, to open up, and to maybe share those real experiences with people?
Yeah, and I had that idea for a long time, and for a long time I never connected with churches because I couldn't be myself at church because I felt like I had to be something that I'm not. And the way that I got through it is by following the lead of my pastor, who... He is extremely real. He is extremely vulnerable, and he doesn't try to act like he has it all together. He shares his weaknesses, and he's very real about what he can and can't do, and that kind of sets the tone for our entire church. Because when your pastor is willing to admit that he sometimes struggles, it makes me feel a little bit better that maybe it's okay that I sometimes struggle, and I think our whole church really takes the lead from him and the way that he conducts himself.
So when God started leading you in this direction where you'd be leading worship and writing songs, was there a part of you that said, I am so ready to go, and another part of you that said, what? There's no way I can do those things.
There was definitely a large part of me that connects with the second part of what you said. I don't know about the first thing. Basically, I feel inadequate and unworthy in a lot of ways, and that held me back for a long time, and it really was my pastor kind of pushing me out, and I didn't take a step out in faith. I was kind of shoved out in faith and lovingly, of course. And
what do you mean by that?
Well, I wasn't really given certain options. I was kind of directed that this is what God has for you. And I wasn't comfortable because I didn't feel worthy of doing some of those things. But he helped me to see that God wanted to use me in those ways. Even if I didn't see the value of myself or the value of how God could possibly use me. And really through his encouragement and just kind of stretching me and pushing me to step out, as I said before, I've had to get really comfortable being uncomfortable because I don't really feel comfortable doing any mm-hmm. of this stuff. I don't feel like I'm worthy of a lot of different things, but God wants to use me in certain ways, and I just have to continue to walk through doors even if I don't think that I should be walking through them sometimes. So.
Well, it was similar to what Megan said. She said, if God would have laid this out and said, here are the plans that I have for you, and now I need you to go forward and do them, she would have said, what? I have to raise money and build a school and adopt four children? I'm single and mm-hmm. don't have a job. And I mean, there's no way she would have said yes. And so if he would have laid all of this out for you, then it would just increase those feelings of inadequacy. But he seems to ease us in to just say yes first, trust me to go forward, and I'm going to have your back. Mm-hmm. Have you found that to be true?
Yeah, there's a book that we read, and it says that God's word is a lamp unto our feet, and it's not a floodlight that guides us all the way there. It is just a little bit at a time, and God knows me well, and he knows that he can only show me basically one step at a time, a few minutes at a time sometimes, because if he laid out the whole plan that he has for me, or if he laid out the whole plan that he has for our church, it would be very difficult for me to follow that or to see how that's possible. But as we just continue to take one little step in faith, he continues to guide us and to take care of us through the steps that we need to take.
So the last song that we get to listen to today is called In the Light of Amazing Grace. What's your story behind that song? How did you come to write that?
Well, one of my favorite things about God is that he has an individual relationship with all of us, and nobody's relationship with God has to look like anybody else's. And for me, I've always had a connection with music, and a lot of times I'm able to express myself better through music than I am through just praying or speaking words. And so a lot of times, most of the songs that I write are kind of prayers, and they're things that I'm trying to express to God, or sometimes he puts a song on my heart that he needs to get something through to me. And in those cases, I kind of know that nobody else is ever going to hear those songs, and it's not really for anybody else. It's just for between me and God. And that's kind of what I thought this song was, when I started writing it, because to be honest, I was writing it in a, a pretty dark and lonely place. And I started writing the song just kind of confessing to God where I was at, and that I felt completely inadequate, that I felt like a failure. All the flaws that I have and all the mistakes that I made were just kind of standing up like mountains in front of me, and that's really all that I could see. And so I started just being honest with God that that's how I was feeling. And I thought that was kind of going to be the theme of the song, but God kind of showed up and changed things, and he told me that in my own strength and in my own power, sometimes I do fail, but I'm not a failure, and that his strength, and when I rely on his strength to get me through, that changes everything. And when I embrace the cross and what Jesus did on the cross, that changes my identity, it changes who I am, it changes what I'm capable of. And so the song In the Light of Amazing Grace came from just being able to rely on God's strength. And if I were to stack up all my successes and all my abilities and pile them as high as I could, and if I were to stack up all of my failures and all of my flaws and all of my shortcomings, I know which one of those two stacks would be higher. And that's not a comforting thought for me, but what is comforting to me is knowing that neither one of those stacks would ever approach what Jesus did on the cross and the height of his love for me. So that's kind of where this song came from. It's just in light of what Jesus did, my whole life is different. And when I rely on that and when I embrace that, it kind of changes everything about my life.
Wonderful message. Let's listen to In the Light of Amazing Grace.
For the things that I've done wrong, I know what I deserve, and eternity surrounded by flames. But in spite of my crimes, redemption is mine in the light of a man. Of amazing grace. And one day I'll stand before you, my sin washed away, and my eyes will dare to look upon your face. And how blessed could I be that I should spend eternity in the light of amazing grace, in the light of amazing grace.
Well, that's Tyler Holte. Tyler, beautiful song, and just expresses the sentiments that so many of us have when we're feeling like we can't do what it is that God is calling us to do. Thanks so much for sharing that. We've been listening to lots of Tyler's music, but of course it's not all of Tyler's music. Why don't you tell us how we might be able to get a copy of your CD and learn more about your church?
The best place to find the CD is at my church's website, which is www.serenityvillagecc.org. You can find the CD there, as well as a book by a good friend of mine, Mike Shea. It's a very inspiring devotional that he wrote, and you can get some of my pastor's materials and some of the messages that he preaches, but also you can kind of find out more about the church. We are blessed to be part of just a powerful move of God, and there's I've never been a part of anything like it, and it's just a blessing to be a part of that church. So go to the church website and you can find out a lot more information about our church.
Well, Tyler, thanks so much for joining us today, for sharing your music and the stories behind your music. It was uplifting and encouraging for all of us. And if you miss any of this show or the first half hour of the show, you can go to our website at myfaithradio.com. Click on the Connecting Faith show page. We will have all the resources that Tyler just mentioned and many more. And we'd love to have you listen to the podcast of the entire show or any other show of your choosing. Thanks so much for joining us on Connecting Faith today. Have a wonderful afternoon.